You're listening to KZSC Santa Cruz, 88.1 FM, KZSC.org, broadcasting from the University of California at Santa Cruz. My name is John Malkin, and the name of this program is Transformation Highway. In 2017, an AR-15 military-style assault rifle was stolen from the Santa Cruz Police Department. The gun remains missing today, and both the former and current police chiefs of Santa Cruz chose not to make the theft public. My three-part article about lost and stolen Santa Cruz Police Department guns was published in the Santa Cruz Sentinel on February 11, 2021, and is available online. My research also uncovered another stolen Santa Cruz police gun, a Glock handgun that went missing in 2011. In recent weeks, you've heard interviews about the stolen AR-15 with Santa Cruz Police Chief Andy Mills and Lieutenant Arnold Vasquez. Here is a quick excerpt from my interview with Santa Cruz Police Chief Andy Mills on the stolen AR-15 assault rifle.
A couple years ago, a firearm was stolen from one of our vehicles and has not been recovered. And this, unfortunately, does happen when people leave firearms in vehicles, and it shouldn't. And that was fully investigated, and appropriate discipline was given.
Can you tell me a little about the circumstances where it was stolen and what kind of gun it was?
Well, that happened before I got here, so I have read the investigation, but it was numerous years ago that I read it, and it was a assault rifle, and it was, we don't know where it was stolen.
Do you have concerns? I mean, what are your greatest concerns about there being a police weapon out and about?
Well, obviously, any weapon that is stolen out of a vehicle, regardless if it's a police weapon or a private weapon, I'm very concerned about, because that's going into the hands of someone who's committing a crime. And so when weapons get taken, regardless of the origin of that weapon, is a huge concern, particularly a police weapon, because now a potential adversary has control of one of our weapons, and that is distasteful, it's wrong, and that's why we take strong internal action against those things when they take place.
Santa Cruz Police Department Lieutenant Arnold Vasquez led a three-week investigation into the stolen AR-15 and could not determine where or when the military-style rifle was stolen from the Santa Cruz Police Department.
At the end of the day, in terms of the investigation, I was unable to verify or have any evidence proving that it was stolen. However, based off of the information that we were able to uncover, it appeared as though it was potentially stolen and likely misappropriated. And so that is exactly how we actually entered it into our database system, primarily because we really didn't have any solid evidence to say that, the firearm itself was stolen from anyone in particular. When we initially began the investigation, we entered it into the system as lost, just to make sure that we had it in there in the event that it surfaced either with another agency or out in the field. We wanted to make sure we had that in there. And then we later modified it to misappropriated, which is actually, a version or form of being stolen.
Here now is another interview about the AR-15 assault rifle that was stolen from the Santa Cruz Police Department in 2017 and remains missing today. You'll be hearing from Io Banjo. He's a student at the University of California at Santa Cruz where he is majoring in politics with a minor in the history of consciousness. Banjo was the UCSC student body president from 2018 to 2019, and he's currently the president of the UCSC chapter of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Here now is an interview with Ayo Banjo. So, you know, I told you the basic story here that this, maybe around 4 years ago, an AR-15 assault rifle was stolen from a Santa Cruz Police Department vehicle, and the gun is still missing, and there was an internal affairs investigation done about this theft, and the Santa Cruz police said that they have held a police officer responsible for the theft, and they punished that officer. And all of that I learned directly from the Santa Cruz police chief, Andrew Mills. This theft has not been made public, and all of that in the midst of this huge uprising to change policing and to make policing more transparent and accountable. And Santa Cruz police and the chief say that they are really transparent and accountable and communicative, and they have community meetings, and there's a transparency portal on their website. And yet no one knows that this gun was stolen and could very well end up being used in a crime or in violence here or anywhere else. It may have traveled somewhere else. What are your concerns about there having been a gun stolen, and your concerns about the lack of accountability?
And it's
It's interesting because it's an AR-15. It's not an AK-47, but these guns and their numbers, you know, a lot of us don't have guns and don't use guns. And those, both of those guns, AK-47 and AR-15, they're war guns that have been modified for, you know, civilian use and police use. But the gun, to be precise, the gun that was stolen from Santa Cruz police was an AR-15, which is a modified gun from the M16, which sort of became infamous during the U.S. war on Vietnam. That was the gun at that time. And it's an automatic weapon where you hold the trigger and it keeps firing. That's been modified, and this gun owned by the Santa Cruz police and other police departments, it only shoots one bullet each time you pull the trigger. But if you pull it fast, it shoots a lot of bullets. And it's commonly referred to as an assault rifle. And, you know, you mention, obviously, this is a military-style weapon, and you mentioned your concern about police having those things. I don't know if you want to say more about that, and I'll add that I requested the expense and income report from the Santa Cruz Police Department for the last couple of years, and they buy grenades, grenade launchers. They bought silencers for guns, sniper rifles, and of course they have an armored personnel carrier called a Bearcat, which a lot of us fought against them getting, but they did end up getting that. I'll mention that when I spoke with Andy Mills, the Santa Cruz police chief, and I said, hey, I saw that you bought a silencer for guns for the police department, and he said, first of all, well, we don't call them silencers. That's what they call them in the movies. They're called a suppressor. The website for the company they bought it from calls it a silencer, and it's, you know, this thing we have seen in movies that you attach to the front of a gun and it makes the bullet shot more quiet. And I said, when would the Santa Cruz police use a silencer? And he said, well, in a situation where you would be concerned that you might hurt the hearing of someone nearby, the gun being shot. Okay, I get that that's the reason for that device, but I didn't really hear from him a scenario where that would be used. And of course, the scenarios we see in movies are sneaky spy assassins who don't want to be heard when they shoot their gun. So just tell me, you know, if you have any other concerns or ideas about making sure that there is a separation, or how to deal with the fact that police are militarized.
Yeah. Make sure that the sound of the gun doesn't in any way hurt the people who are close to them. That sounds ridiculous, and I hope that nobody buys that, because how can you care about the eardrums of somebody next to you but don't care about the actual life of the person at the end of the barrel that you're shooting the gun at, especially when you have, like you said, an AR-15, which is an assault rifle, which I believe can shoot up to 1,000 different bullets per minute, depending on what kind of AR-15 it is. And so that just seems fairly ridiculous to me, that that would be the excuse. I think a lot of times, even for the police chief to say that it was from, you know, they would name it, they would call that in the movie. You know, it just, this idea, I think that a lot of the way that we can, you know, imagine policing, and a lot of ways that police imagine themselves, is this kind of, you know, movie-style, you know, hero. And, you know, almost kind of
needing these weapons to not only feel protected, but to feel, you know, strong and cool. I just, you know, when I asked the police chief myself, you know, how do you measure community safety? What are your metrics that you use to define community safety? And what are the evidence that those exact metrics have actually worked? The chief responded to me saying they don't have any, you know, community-defined metrics that, you know, accumulate to community safety, which means that we have a community safety program that doesn't know how to track its own progress of whether it's reaching community safety, that doesn't in any way engage with the community to ensure that its current protocols and measures are really fostering a full, holistic, engaging community, including the statistical minority as well. And we don't have that kind of community-driven direction for our quote-unquote community safety program, a.k.a. the Santa Cruz Police Department. So, again, this just goes to reiterate the fact that we have, you know, programs being funded by taxpayer dollars, by my taxpayer dollars, by your taxpayer dollars, by our property taxes, by our sales taxes of Santa Cruz. We have these funds basically funding this program that we're pretty sure does not have a good return in terms of whether it's actually fulfilling its job responsibilities and its duties, while still giving them more money year by year by year. About $16 million is funded for patrolling for the Santa Cruz Police Department, and they asked for more money this year, and they received more money this year, even through a deficit. And they also just received another $80,000 from the California Traffic Office, that is the transportation office, that was specifically allocated that fund for patrolling. And so at the end of the day, we really have to ask ourselves the question, not just, you know, how should we respond to such a inappropriate misuse of accountability of weapons and just the lack of need for those kind of weapons here, but we also really have to get to the core question of what are those weapons supposed to be mitigating? What are they supposed to be preventing that treatment couldn't do a better job of doing? What are they supposed to be intervening in that we can pull the last 20 years in Santa Cruz crime data that specifically shows that, okay, yeah, we needed the AR-15 in this particular location? You see, the problem with the Santa Cruz Police Department is that they're all talk when it comes to, oh, we need this, we need that, but they have no data to back up with any of their claims of need. They have no way of tracking how successful pulling an AR-15 on a person really does translate to a type of community safety. So at the end of the day, they're continuously increasing their militarization of the way that they operate while decreasing the accountability, decreasing the amount of data that is tracked to be able to see if they're even successful in their model, and then also essentially decreasing the trust that the community has in them and the credibility that they, you know, have at all. So, you know, I'm not very sure what their end goal is here, but again, we need to make sure that we as a community are at the forefront of defining what community safety looks like. And if that means that there should be, you know, a community safety program that has particular weapons, then we should have a community discussion about the pros and cons and the cost and benefits of that analysis. But that conversation, the cost and benefit analysis, not only is it not being had right now, it's not even democratized. I mean, the decision to be able to secure suppressors that are actually called silencers by the actual company. You know, what kind of engagement did the police department have, not just with the city council or the community, if they even communicated with them, but what conversation did they have with the statistical minority of the community, the people of color, the citizens of color, who are the legit statistical minority, where we have about 1% to less than 1% Black population in Santa Cruz County as a whole? Where were they when this, you know, suppressor / silencer was bought? And did they have any say in response to that? So at the end of the even the president of the United, even the executive branch of the federal government has their own investigators and whistleblowers and folks, you know, that span throughout the department that they could utilize when something goes wrong. But then you have a system in which police essentially, you know, have a buddy system. I mean, you look at other police unions that are literally called like the Brotherhood of policing or whatever. They call themselves like it sounds like a fraternity. And you expect them to turn on each other when something goes wrong? No, do frat bros and do sorority girls turn on each other if something's going to happen? No, they look at themselves as family, as brotherhood, as some kind of, you know, team. And so these folks are, you know, think that they would in any way hold each other accountable to the fullest possible outcome, to the point where they are publishing the cop's name that stole that AR-15, to the point where they are able to be very transparent and make sure that they have folks hired to be able to update that transparency portal. So that's how we know that a police model is actually, you know, in our benefit. And the fact that they're not doing those basic things just show us that they're really not for us.
You're listening to an interview with Io Banjo. He's a student at the University of California at Santa Cruz. He was the UCSC student body president from 2018 to 2019, and he's currently the president of the UCSC chapter of the NAACP. He's speaking about police accountability, transparency, and creating a new system for policing in Santa Cruz, California. Also, he's addressing the theft of an AR-15 assault rifle from the Santa Cruz Police Department in 2017, which remains missing today. Here again is Io Banjo. The police and city folks say that they do have oversight there, and that they even have three or four layers of it. They would say that the Public Safety Committee of the City Council, Internal Affairs at the Police Department, and the police auditor, who currently is Mike Giannacco, that they provide oversight about the police. And when I talked to Mike Giannacco, the current police auditor, you know, you were mentioning about data and just the police don't analyze and present data that supports what they're doing. You know, I pointed out to Mike Giannacco that I received through a records request the calls for service from, you know, that the police department went to for the last year or so. So I get, you know, 800 pages and it says every call that they went to. And wow, how am I to figure out, you know, take that data and figure out what percentage were Black and brown people? What percentage was violence used by a police officer or threatened by a police officer? What types of crimes happen in Santa Cruz? How many crimes get solved by Santa Cruz police? Mike Giannacco said, oh yeah, that's a problem analyzing the data. He used to work with someone from Stanford who would analyze data for him. He suggested I reach out and find a talented data analyst at UC Santa Cruz because it's right nearby. And I thought, that's a great idea. And I know people at UC Santa Cruz. And then I thought, why isn't the police department doing that and telling us what they're up to all year long?
Right. That's okay. So that is exactly the problem. When it comes to them even wanting to implement any methods of their own, I mean, it's so crazy how the police are, we're the highest funded department in Santa Cruz, more funded than the Economic Development Department, right? Over 10 times, actually, funded more than the Economic Development Department. It's funded, and you're saying that as a department that has so much money that you could not figure out how to allocate enough funds to be able to secure and create data, that just goes to show you that it has nothing to do with ability. It has nothing to do with their inability, or it doesn't have to do with their lack of knowledge of data. It has to do with priority. Your budget is your morals. The budget, it really reflects what you care about. And when you don't invest in data analysts and you don't invest in collecting this information and being able to separate it in terms of demographics to actually know your impact, that means that you just don't care about your impact. You don't care about what the disproportionate use of force is on students of color, on people of color. And I will just say, to respond back to your initial point about there being three entities that the police, you know, ultimately, you know, have kind of, you know, a sense of oversight over. Like I said, the first one, that internal police, that is ridiculous. Police cannot police themselves. There needs to be an external complaint process that the police don't handle, that is in response to the police. That's number one. And then this public safety committee, I want to first and foremost know, last time I checked, the public safety committee consists of folks from, you know, either from city council or from the police department or from the county sheriff's office. And so for me, that public safety committee isn't truly effective if it's not engaging, not only not engaging with the actual statistical minority that live in the community, but if the statistical minority can't actually sway and change the agenda of the public safety committee, then what committee, what good are you really doing? Because again, this is not enough. It's not enough to just say that, oh, the people who are in the police department should be able to have a committee that oversees, you know, things going on in the police department. This is about really giving power to the statistical minority and ensuring that they are in charge of how they are policed. So the public safety committee is not good enough in terms of an oversight entity. It simply is not. So I just don't think that an internal process within the police department and then having a public safety committee and then having, you know, a police auditor who, by the way, again, did not even meet the mayor of Santa Cruz until we as the UCC NAACP hosted the forum on racial injustice where the police auditor and the mayor met for the first time ever. That's crazy. The mayor is in charge of appointing the police chief and of coordinating these efforts and coordinating a public safety model and has not once met with the police auditor. And you're just telling me that they're supposed to be playing an oversight role when they're not even in communication with them at all? That's I mean, again, like, who are they playing? Who is the Santa Cruz Police Department playing? Like, who are these folks playing? We're not going to be played right now when it comes to the fact that they don't have any oversight or any accountability, and the metrics, the structures that are in place that make it look like they have accountability are really compromised. And we need to build a model, again, that's community-centered, that really empowers the fiscal minority, and that's how we have a much more oversight process that could be more legitimate. This process right now, this oversight process, everything that's going on right now, it is not legitimate and it does not have credibility in the eyes of many students, many community members, and many organizers and activists who have continued to be advocating for a new model that is treatment-centered.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to say more about if you've had direct experiences with police in Santa Cruz, or if you know Black and brown people, especially who have had difficult experiences with the Santa Cruz police.
Yes, I know many students and community members who have had terrible run-ins with the Santa Cruz Police Department. I have a friend that also, had some lady after she had organized a protest, some white lady who spilled a whole bunch of liquids in her car and was trying to terrorize her and harass her, obviously after she disorganized. And she got out of the car and was like, what are you doing? What's going on? What's happening? And she had called the police to report that somebody had just harassed her, that something was going on. And again, this is a black lady that was harassed. And the police basically, you know, responded saying, oh, you know what? Yeah, we cannot do anything. We can't help you in this particular circumstance. No way to start an investigation, even though, again, you know, this was in front of a traffic light where they actually have access to the cameras to check to see who it was. But I think that is just a small example of when, you know, folks of color, particularly black folks, even try to utilize the police in that particular way, the lack of efficiency and response rate, and the taking the case actually seriously, is pretty small. And I think that goes to show that, you know, if we can't rely on a policing model, if we can't rely on our current community safety model to keep us safe from folks who may want to harm us, then who can we rely on? And that's the main problem that I've seen from different folks who've experienced police brutality in Santa Cruz. I've had so many different instances, whether it's on campus and the police at the, you know, the cost of living adjustment protest with UCSD students, being super violent to UCSD students, you know, again, like, you know, having their arms around their necks and using a lot of aggressive force to hurt many of our students of color who are just out there trying to protest for higher wages to be able to afford to live in Santa Cruz. And again, these metrics that are employed by the police are also in a way endorsed by the university and by the city, since they are having joint mutual partnerships to be able to fund these different police officers coming from different places to use this brutality method. I think that all of these types of issues accumulate to the fact that our current system, it just can't be trusted. And honestly, I mean, again, with the historic ties of the policing to slave patrols and, you know, the development from having, you know, folks who were in charge of finding enslaved black people and returning them to their quote-unquote masters, to then developing this police department, I think, again, it forces us to reckon with, well, you know, what were they here to do in the first place? And are they accomplishing their ultimate mission, their ultimate goal that they were here for in the first place? I would say they are. You know, if you go back to the fact that these the police officers are essentially, you know, the modern era state patrols, but instead they're here to perpetuate a kind of caste system. They're here to perpetuate the kind of hierarchy in terms of just I'm blanking on the word, but it's basically like you are criminalizing poverty, and for them to perpetuate the criminalization of poverty through their methods that, you know, are still similar to those in the 1900s, I think that is just goes to show what they were here for. So we shouldn't expect anything different. We can't expect that we have a system that was created from slave patrols and that's now disproportionately affecting and hurting and killing black and brown bodies. We just can't expect for that system, that institution, to just out of nowhere lose all of that discrimination that it was founded upon and that it uses to attract people into the department. And also, we cannot continue to use this idea of Santa Cruz being progressive to negate the responsibility and negate the historical ties of the Santa Cruz Police Department to the original intent of slave patrols. It's not enough to say, oh, we have a really charismatic guy named Andy who is the chief and who is super progressive. That is not a progressive police institution. It's not by who is the chief of police, it's by what are the metrics used to define safety and how are they employing those metrics? How successful are those metrics and are the community? Can the community have genuine input that will actually sway and change the overall procedures of our community safety program? That is what defines us as a superior progressive city that is taking responsibility for making sure that all of its community members, including the statistical minority, is the rest of that is really just BS to me.
This is KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. My name is John Malkin. This is Transformation Highway. You're listening to an interview with Io Banjo. He's a student at the University of California at Santa Cruz. He was the UCSC student body president from 2018 to 2019, and he's currently the president of the UCSC chapter of the NAACP. He's speaking about police accountability, transparency, and creating a new system for policing in Santa Cruz, California. Also, he's addressing the theft of an AR-15 assault rifle from the Santa Cruz Police Department in 2017, which remains missing today. Here again is Io Banjo. Hey, I just want to ask you one more thing, and I really appreciate your time and talking with me. This is kind of too wide. What I'm about to talk to you about is a little bit too wide for me to bring into this article, but I was just curious. I kind of just want a little more clarity, and if you have your opinion about this, it could be helpful for me just as I'm moving forward. There's a lot of interconnected ideas, and I'm going to be doing stories about the police changing here. A lot of people are demanding that, and something's going to happen. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, the Santa Cruz ACLU chapter and the Santa Cruz NAACP chapter, I would like them to comment on this AR-15 that was stolen and is still missing and the lack of transparency. So those groups are made up of a bunch of people, and they all have their own ideas, and they argue, you know, at their meetings, I'm sure, about what to do and what not to do. So far, neither of those groups is talking to me. The ACLU, they technically have to check with the larger ACLU, the Northern California ACLU, before they make statements. The NAACP, Brenda Griffin is the main person there, and she's not answering my emails and calls. And the thing that these groups have in common, the last few years, they're meeting with Andy, the progressive new police chief, and they're really happy about it overall. You know, they would tell me, hey, we have direct communication, he really listens. They co-sponsored the Martin Luther King Jr. parade the last 3 years, where the police come in uniform wearing guns. So I'm a little reluctant to think that those groups are gonna provide any push towards actual change in policing. And so far they're not commenting on this gun. I don't know if you have like direct contact with Brenda at the NAACP, or if you have ideas about what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like just for me as I'm talking to people, like, are you connected with the NAACP that Brenda is president of? And do you feel like you're moving side by side, you know, with similar ideas and visions?
I'll tell you this. I don't, again, there's a reason why I started and founded the UCSC NAACP. I don't rely on any existing Santa Cruz institutions particularly to try tried to push forward particular changes that should have been pushed forward decades ago, to now all of a sudden be able to execute that efficiently and appropriately. So for me, my focus has been on how do we not just have a theoretical, philosophical conversation on abolition versus non-abolition or whatever that means. What we should be doing is testing out what doesn't work, right? And developing metrics to define how we actually as a community think of ourselves when it comes to safety. What does that ideal community safety scenario look like for us? And how do we define particular variables, whether it's mental health of the community, whether it's the physical health of the community, whether it's the economic support of the community? What are particular variables that we could use to actually say this is a safe community? And then from there, how do we develop those methods to ensure that we also have preventative, interventative, and postvention measures to ensure that that scenario of community safety is being upheld within our community? So that definition and alone of being able to define community safety is something that I believe the ACLU and all other organizations should be a part of in terms of the conversation. But if your question is more so in terms of, you know, why isn't anything going on there, why isn't anything has been happening there, I refer back to my previous answer when I talked about the fact that there is a sense of false progressivism in Santa Cruz, and particularly I call it exclusionary progressivism, which, you know, in a sense where you don't really, you want progress in terms of the lip service, but you don't really want to change anything. And so I go back to the fact that it's not enough to have a chief of police who is, you know, really nice and buddy-buddy with the leaders of these different nonprofits and organizations, because ultimately, number one, just because you have a progressive chief doesn't mean that that equates to progressive policies or to the way that the budget is actually allocated, since we're seeing more and more funding is going into patrolling, which is then used to patrol a lot of low-income people, particularly the homeless people, which end up tend to be more people of color who are overrepresented in the homeless population, right? So we know that that is not going to be what we look for when we talk about a progressive police. It's not in the chief because it doesn't translate into the policies, and it's also not in the chief because it doesn't translate into the actual police officers who are armed and deployed to different parts of the city to respond to and, in other instances, harass different people engaged in whatever issue that they're going through. So the fact that we have folks who rely on the chief's word to then feel comfortable in their sense of activism does not connect and is not parallel to what Martin Luther King would have done and would have preached for when he spoke that I Have a Dream speech, and being able to really not only articulate what the vision of society can look like, but to push forward on that vision, to not just be okay and comfortable with the existing power infrastructures telling you that you're being heard, but to really make sure that you're being heard through the actual policy changes that are institutionalized because of your activism, like the Voting Rights Act after MLK's death. Those are the type of policies and energy that we should be channeling when it comes to trying to bring this activism into Santa Cruz to change policing. But in fact, we don't have that same type of energy. So at the end of the day, what we have to do is not isolate these organizations and folks who may not be pushing forward that metric. It's simply for us as the UCC and the NAACP to step up and to play a role that is going to be pushing forward a resolution that is going to be redefining crime in Santa Cruz, called the Community Refund. And that is the only way that we envision actually getting to the change that we want to see and the timeline that we want to see it in. Because I feel like at this point, when you don't have a particular vision of what to do next, but you only know what you don't like, then you get caught in this stagnant system where you want to do something maybe, but you don't know what you want to do, but you're still yourself be the leader of an organization that you don't know what you want to do. And that ultimately just results in talk. And that's what we're seeing right now, talk. And it's completely okay to have discussions around how we want to implement these changes, but to be at a point where we're still barely having discussions around general things like the philosophical nature, you know, whether we should do, go through abolition. And by the way, I just want to say that in other instances, in other places, particularly, I don't want to name any particular organizations, but in certain organizations that are also happen to be Black-led, that there aren't particularly those conversations in regards to abolition. More so, it's like changes like, oh, we're going to ban chokeholds, or we're going to like do certain things that are less use of force. We may just even bring in a cahoots model potentially to be able to really engage there. And again, that cahoots model is the beginning of the conversation. But we don't want to get stuck in terms of allowing the same people who ultimately implemented the community safety protocol in a failure way. We don't want to have those exact same people also defining what we do next. We should not be having the public safety model in itself telling us what should be done next, or telling us where they feel comfortable going next. And a lot of times that's how it's organized. That's how the local elected officials orient themselves in response to changes in the police department. They first say, well, is the police comfortable with that? This isn't about the police's comfort. And again, that's how you know that a lot of this is just political. It's not like anyone's trying to get to a real answer. It's about politics. And even the reason why any of the folks are maybe moving towards a conversation towards, redefining policing, it is because of politics. But how do we not just move forward this conversation in a political way, but how do we also make sure that the core of what we believe is really community-centered? I mean, I don't want this to just be a performance. I want us to truly redefine our values and to really be community-driven. So, again, it means that we can't get comfortable in the current politics of quote-unquote progressive police chief. We need to make sure that we're keeping all of our elected officials feet to the fire. The same thing that I said with Mayor Cummings, who is a Black man, that's mayor. That's phenomenal. I'm glad that we have representation in the office. But at the end of the day, you being a Black man does not obfuscate you from being criticized and held accountable by Black people. I don't understand why it's such a phenomenon to believe that, you still have to hold your elected officials accountable no matter their race. And I believe that, again, I want to see more people of color in office, more Black people in office, but that does not take away your responsibility to still meet the needs of the people. And if you're not doing that, then I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. Period. Being at the helm of this conversation and doing this investigative journalism that needs to be done, especially in an era where we have a lot of different just local news outlets slowly kind of dying around the country. The local journalism and local investigative journalism is super crucial to our democracy. So I appreciate you for continuously doing the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you. And yeah, thanks for what you're doing too. You're pushing in the same directions, and I want to support that. And we will talk again soon.
Yes, we will, definitely.
Cool. Enjoy the sunshine today.
Yes, thank you. You too. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye.
You've been listening to an interview with Ayo Banjo about the AR-15 assault rifle that was stolen from the Santa Cruz Police Department in 2017 that remains missing today. Ayo Banjo was the UCSC student body president from 2018 to 2019. He is currently the president of the University of California at Santa Cruz chapter of the NAACP.